any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Welcome to Shooter's Corner, your program for conversation on guns, shooting, and your Second Amendment rights. Brought to you by Price RV, Auto Trim Design, by Rogers Auto Repair, and by Frontier Outfitters. Now, your host, Chuck Indereeden.
Welcome, listeners. It's currently 50 degrees here in Fairbanks, Alaska, and it's partly cloudy. It's nice. Got a little sprinkle over the evening, which was perfect because I was able to get out there and get all the leaves from last year sucked up off the grass. So hopefully my grass will start to be able to turn greener a little bit faster. But anyways, we're here at the KFAR studio here in Fairbanks, Alaska. You can always listen to us at 97.5 or 660 AM and then also stream us at kfarradio.com. Just click on that big orange ball that says listen live. Remember, we also have an app out there, the KFAR radio app. You just click on that and it listens live all the time. So you're pretty cool there. So if you happen to be traveling, as we were recently, you can listen in on the show while you're driving down Interstate 40 in the backcountry of Tennessee. So it's pretty easy. Let's get the show started. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Just a reminder, the Alaska Outdoor Mentorship Program is still going on over there at TVSA. Can't remember the exact next date, but it's like, what, the second or third Thursday of each month. Anyways, it'll be posted on TVSA's probably Facebook page or something like that. For some reason, their webpage was down. Happened to notice that. So,
yeah, I did too. I went to three different links and nothing was up. So
yeah, it actually said on the Google side, it said permanently closed.
Yeah.
It's like weird.
I have to reach out to Mike today.
Yeah, maybe. We got a call?
Yes, we do.
All right, caller. Here with Chuck and Matt, and guess not. All right, moving on. Just remember, TVSA also has their memberships over there as well, so you can get in on that. And then they have public shooting hours over on Thursday from 6 to 8. I don't think that's changed. I was still on their Facebook page, so that should still be good. Cost is $5 for members and $20 for non-members. And just remember, C4 Training Group is hosting Active Self-Protection Skills Summit here in Fairbanks on June 20th and 21st. This exclusive immersive training event is designed to sharpen your defensive skills using ASP, that's ASP, evidence-based techniques. Experience two transformative days of professional instruction tailored for real-world self-defense scenarios. No, I'm not having a stroke. I'm fine. The instructors will be Neil Widener and Chris Bean. Go to our website calendar, or you can get the link from activeselfprotection.com/shop. All right, let's see, a carbine class for home self-defense, right, Matt?
Yes, sir.
So C4 Training Group, we're going to be having our carbine, so M4 carbine, AR, whatever. I don't care if you bring a lever action or an AK-47, knock yourself out. Because as I've always heard from people such as Clint Smith, two gun systems every American should know how to operate, M4 carbine and the AK-47. So anywho, that will be on July 25th and 26th. July 25th. The Defensive Carbine Level 1 course will cover basic operation, maintenance, employment, malfunction, clearance drills, and strategies for home defense with the most in common use rifle in our nation. And then on the next day, July 26th, the class will go beyond the basics and cover tactics and drills. It will help keep you and your family alive, allowing you to be an asset and not a liability. Make sure you go to c4traininggroup.com for more information and to sign up for both days of great training. All right, moving along. This Week in Firearms History is actually pretty interesting. Not as cool as the whole, this was the week or day exactly that like Glock received their patent, but still pretty interesting. So May 20 or 18th through the 24th in Firearms History actually helped launch the American system of manufacturing. So I thought this was pretty interesting. So This Week in Firearm History isn't about another flashy revolver or a famous battle. It's about something quieter, but far more revolutionary. The moment an obscure Maine gunsmith changed how guns and eventually everything else would be made in America. So on May 21st, 1811, John Hancock Hall and his controversial co-patentee, William Thornton, received U.S. patent X1516 for a single-shot breech-loading rifle at the time when every soldier was still loading from the muzzle, standing up, ramming the ball and powder down a long barrel with a rod. Hall's design simply lets you open the pivoting breech block at the rear, drop in a paper cartridge or loose powder or ball, close it, and fire. You can load it lying down, kneeling, or even on horseback. It was dramatically faster and more practical than muzzle loaders, especially in bad weather or from awkward positions. That makes sense. Like a little hard to load a muzzle loader or whatever when you're like trying to lay on your back from incoming fire.
Yeah. Especially when it's taller than you.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think they understood the concept sometimes back then. You know, I was watching Napoleon on the plane.
The one with the whole, Joaquin Phoenix?
Well, the little short guy. Anyway, yeah. Not Napoleon Dynamite. The other one. Anyways, cool one. It was amazing to me just the tactics that they had used, yeah. Like or lack of, compared to how things are fought nowadays. Like, yeah. They would probably lose their mind if a drone flew over them. But anyways. Oh, yeah. That whole standing up, I guess they didn't understand the concept that incoming fire has a right of way.
Maybe,
maybe just, they did. Maybe they just thought that they were so inaccurate at range.
That's probably what it was. Is they didn't get hit enough, so they're like, "Nah, it's fine."
Get hit enough. There yeah. It was. So, the U.S. Army eventually adapted it as a Model 1819 Hall rifle, the first breech-loading rifle put into significant military production by any nation's army, because the earlier Ferguson rifle used by the British was only a temporary thing. So. What made it special? The breech block tilted upward on a reverse transverse pin, exposing a chamber you could load from the rear. It was originally flintlock, later converted to percussion. And most importantly, Hall insisted on interchangeable parts. That's the revolutionary part, right? That's the revolutionary part. He insisted on interchangeable parts. Every rifle's components had to be identical and swappable without hand fitting, right? So the real revolution was that interchangeable parts. Hall just didn't invent a better gun. He used the government contract, for 1,000 rifles to prove something radical. That ordinary workmen using precision machines he designed could produce firearms with parts so uniform they were truly interchangeable. So he set up shop on an island in the Shenandoah River in Harper's Ferry Armory, later called Hall's Rifle Work or Hall Island. There he built milling machines, drop hammers, and gauging systems that were decades ahead of their time. This was one of the earliest and most successful demonstrations of American system of manufacturing, the foundation of modern mass production. I say a lot of people would say that Henry Ford did that. I think he did the assembly line.
Yep.
Not the mass production. So his methods spread to Springfield Armory and private manufacturers, influencing everything from clocks to cars. Why this story matters? Hall's rifle itself had limitations, gas leakage at the breech, higher costs, some reliability issues. So it never fully replaced muzzle loaders, but its influence was enormous in that it proved breech loaders were viable for military use. It accelerated the shift to percussion ignition and eventually metallic cartridges, and it laid groundwork for later American breech loaders like the Sharps, Spencer, and eventually the Trapdoor Springfield. John Hall died in 1841. Relatively unknown compared to Colt or Winchester, but without his obsessive drive for precision and interchangeability, the rapid industrial scaling of American firearms, the American industry in general, would have been delayed for decades. So this week in 1811 wasn't loud or dramatic like Lexington and Concord. It was a quiet beginning of something much bigger. The idea that guns and eventually everything could be made faster, cheaper, and more reliably by machines and standardized parts rather than by hand. That single patent on May 21st, 1811, helped set the stage for the industry that would later arm the Union in the Civil War and make American manufacturing legendary. There we go. All right, what's your thoughts on that, Matt? I thought that was actually kind of interesting that that popped up on the old calendar.
One, I do think it is very interesting that we continuously have topics to discuss for this week's in firearms history. So that's really cool. But now the other thing is,
it is history.
It is history. What a genius thing to do to be able to have interchangeable parts that aren't hand fit.
Yeah.
I think for you and I especially, and some of the people we train that take it really as serious as possible, we're constantly changing out our failure points on our weapons. It's not necessarily that the weapon is bad, right? Everything is going to break at some point or another. So doing our preventative maintenance, changing it out ahead of time, or in the cases where something just goes bad, like gas rings on a bolt carrier group, we're taking the time to go ahead and switch that out. And how convenient is it that you know, someone had the idea to go, eh, instead of hand fitting, let's just make it to where it'll fit on it. So we have all of our tolerances within a certain check. And that makes it easier. It's cheaper for us. And then, you know, we're able to extend the life of our firearms without having to travel 3.5 hours to our nearest gunsmith that can do X, Y, Z, and then go to someone else for someone. Yeah. So I
hand think, pound out another part for you.
Exactly. I mean, could you imagine firing pins alone? How much of a pain that would be. So I think it's great. I think it's awesome that that happened. And I think, you know, it has revolutionized everything. If we didn't have that, you wouldn't have Primary Arms, the Glock store, everywhere you can buy 1,000 different parts for what you want, and you know 99% of the time it's going to work.
You know, you just kind of gave me a little visual in my head there, you know, like the firing pin on an AR is incredibly light anyways.
Yeah.
Like you'd have to hand mill one of those or pound one out of a Budweiser beer can or something.
Yeah. Even then it to, might break down. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, we got to go into our first break. So stay tuned here with Matt and Chuck at Shooter's Corner here in the great city of Fairbanks, Alaska. We will be right back after this break. And we're waiting on Matt to get that thing spooled up. And here we go. All right, we're heading into the break.
We'll be right back after this break.
Whether you're flying or boating into your favorite fishing hole or just driving to the lake, make Frontier Outfitters your first stop for all the fishing gear, licenses, permits, and stamps you'll need. Frontier's extensive fishing department has the conventional, fly, or saltwater tackle for every game fish in Alaska's streams, rivers, lakes, and ocean habitats. Rods and reels, lures and natural bait, lines and nets, dip netting supplies, even sunglasses. Frontier Outfitters has what you need for your successful trip, plus marine parts and equipment downstairs at Century Hardware. Frontier Outfitters, for your Alaskan lifestyle.
Hey Fairbanks, Bryant from Auto Trim Design. Now's the perfect time to get your work trucks set up right. From toppers, back racks, beacons, running board seat covers, floor liners, bed slides, ladder racks, and so much more. Auto Trim Design has everything you need to tackle any job. Our commercial toppers keep your equipment and tools secure and out of the elements. Need to keep your bed organized? Add a deck drawer system to easily access all your gear. Contact Auto Trim Design for your professional truck grade accessories today.
Customized by Auto Trim.
KFAR weather.
Cloudy skies expected this afternoon with a slight chance of rain showers. Daytime highs approaching 63. Winds out of the south 5 to 10 miles per hour. Mainly cloudy skies expected tonight. Slight chance for showers. Lows dip down to about 42. Partly cloudy tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 62. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
All right, welcome back, listeners. You're with Chuck and Matt here at Shooter's Corner here in Fairbanks, 97.5 FM, 660 AM. All right, anyways, remember you can always listen to us live here at KFARradio.com, or you can use the app as well. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to call in 907-458-TALK. That is 458-8255 for those of you who have an old rotary phone without the letters. So anywho, and let's get into today's editorial. I thought this was interesting because it has to do with a recent Supreme Court decision, a unanimous 9-0 decision on something that involves firearms.
Oh,
imagine
interesting.
That. So we spent weeks talking about the real purpose of the Second Amendment, rooted in the shot heard around the world at Lexington and Concord, explained in the Federalist Papers and repeatedly affirmed by the Supreme Court in Heller, McDonald, and Bruin. Today we add a critical piece that every gun owner needs to understand. How can the Supreme Court say in a unanimous 9-0 decision that the government cannot violate one constitutional right in order to impose on or burden another? They said it clearly in Canigula v. Strom, 2021 case. In that case, police entered a man's home without a warrant during what they called a welfare check and seized his firearms. They claim it was justified under something called the community caretaker exception. The Supreme Court unanimously rejected that argument. Justice Clarence Thomas, wrote for the entire court, "The community caretaking idea that sometimes applies to cars does not apply to homes. Police cannot use safety concerns or the presence of firearms as an excuse to bypass the Fourth Amendment's warrant requirement." That decision answers the exact question so many of you are asking right now. No, they cannot search your car simply because you have a legal firearm. Lawful possession or carry of a firearm does not create reasonable suspicion or probable cause to violate your Fourth Amendment rights. The Supreme Court has made it plain across multiple rulings, including unanimous ones. Constitutional rights are not ranked against each other, so the government cannot pick which one it feels like honoring on any given day. Exercising your Second Amendment right does not turn off your Fourth Amendment protections, period. Yet, this is exactly what far too many states are doing in practice under the endless public safety banner. They pass magazine bans, assault weapon restrictions, sensitive place rules, and complicated permitting schemes. In the real world, these laws often mean more traffic stops, more questions, more vehicle searches, and more encounters where law-abiding gun owners are treated like suspects, all because they chose to exercise a constitutional right. Meanwhile, the same politicians and officials who push these policies make sure they have layers of armed security at taxpayer expense. They understand perfectly well that armed protection matters. They just don't want you to have that same capability without jumping through their hoops or risking extra police scrutiny. This is the same mindset the founders rejected. At Lexington and Concord, British troops tried to seize colonial arm caches through searches and disarmament. The founders, fresh off that experience, wrote the Second Amendment and the Fourth Amendment to work together as a firewall against exactly this kind of government overreach. They didn't want a system where the state could use any pretext, safety, welfare, or public order to search your property and take your means of self-defense. The attack at the White House Correspondents' Dinner made this crystal clear once again. Even with heavy Secret Service protection, a determined individual nearly breached the perimeter. Government security has limits. That's why the right to keep and bear arms exists, and why it cannot be turned into a trigger for Fourth Amendment violations. The Supreme Court has done its job in Caligula, in Bruin, and in the foundational cases before them. The court has drawn the line. The government does not get to violate one constitutional right to restrict another. States and localities that try to do so through clever legislation or policing practices are operating outside of constitutional boundaries. Here's what you need to do. Contact your state and local federal representatives, tell them to stop passing laws that treat lawful gun owners as automatic suspects that invite Fourth Amendment violations. Support candidates and organizations that defend the entire Bill of Rights, not just the convenient parts. Know your rights. Lawful carry does not equal reasonable suspicion. Document encounters, train regularly, and carry responsibly. Push back against the narrative that more restrictions on you equal more safety for everyone. The data and history show otherwise. The founders gave us these rights because they knew government power grows when citizens are disarmed, searched at will, or made to feel like second-class rights holders. The Supreme Court's 9-0 decision in Caligula and broader principle it represents is a reminder that we still have a Constitution worth defending. Stay vigilant, stay armed, stay free. Also understand, that is not legal advice.
We are not attorneys.
We're not attorneys.
As much as we'd like to think with our legal advice that we don't hand out, usually being pretty correct based off of experience, we are not attorneys.
Yeah, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that in our next little training segment here. Because a lot of things that we talk about in like the Alaska Concealed Handgun Permit class is like that trifecta of ability, opportunity, and jeopardy, right?
Yep.
And we tell the students that. The one we've kind of been missing and leaving out is preclusion. I think it's important that we talk about that. That's one of the things that we're going to talk about today, though. I don't really want to get into the weeds too much on that right now, because that's literally a whole quarter of an hour segment. But I thought this was pretty interesting, though. It wasn't about the guns, just so you know. It's not about the guns on this. This is about the government basically rejecting one of your Bill of Rights amendments in lieu of another one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's why I think they were able to come to that 9-0 decision. Like, hold on, if we start letting government entities do that, like this is a rabbit hole we're not going to be able to get out of.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And that's going to be a precursor for something way worse.
Oh.
What it may be, we do not know, but you can usually tell that when the government is saying, we can't really let that one fly. You know, someone's going to try, someone's going to push. And if it does ever get passed, it'll be bad.
Yeah. And we already know that they love this whole public safety thing. But, you know, going under into somebody's residence under the pretense of a welfare check, I could see where that's starting to go in line with the red flag laws.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. I mean,
where somebody can make an accusation.
Yeah.
And then get a judge to sign off on it and then come in and seize all of your stuff.
Yeah.
Because you might be a danger to yourself or society. And I get it. In some cases, that's probably needed. In some cases, could it be used as a bad tool?
And that's where it's very hard to draw the line, what's acceptable and what's not. Because everything, as much as people want to say things are black and white, we've talked about it on the show, there it's a lot of gray area. Where is this acceptable? Okay, would it be for this? It has to go by a case-to-case basis. It can't just be a blanketed, oh, yep, here's what we're going to do or not do.
Yeah. And I've seen that used before, too. I've seen a case where a lady sat in the courtroom and made an accusation that her soon-to-be ex-husband had a gun pointed at her, threatened her with it, and all that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that was all documented in a petition on a restraining order.
Yeah.
Got it. Then, under oath, sat in court months later and said, oh, yeah, I lied about that. That didn't happen. And it's like, you just upset this person's life because of this accusation.
Yep.
Like, literally had to get rid of all of his firearms and give them to family members to hold because he didn't want to violate the court order. He was being an upstanding and responsible person. On the other hand, then I was like trying to go and say, well, she just lied under oath then mm-hmm. on this previous thing. That's a crime. And you know what? They wouldn't prosecute it.
Really?
Yeah.
Can't say I'm not surprised. It seems like certain things don't get enough traction when someone's lying in court in favor of, you know, one side or the other. It doesn't help. I mean, you're taking an oath, you're trying to do the right thing. You could slip up and say the wrong thing. I could understand that. But when you're actively lying and you don't think it's a big deal because you're trying to win your case, but it's ruining someone else's life, their livelihood, everything they stand for, their family, their friends, their work, that something should happen.
Well, but it goes right back to what, you know, I've kind of talked about before, that whole red flag thing.
Yep.
Can somebody just do the same thing, make an accusation? Yeah. And, you know, they say, oh, but there's guardrails in there. Like, they could be prosecuted. But everyone that I've seen, they haven't gone back and prosecuted them.
No. You look at, I think it was in New York. I don't know if you remember, it was in 2020, the Duncan Lemp incident that happened.
No,
doesn't ring a bell. He got out of the Army, moved back home, and one thing in the military is you're going to have 30-round magazines. It's part of your work. Some people don't have a place to store them at work, so you have them with you at home. He got out, and someone, a disgruntled neighbor down the road, and I could be a little wrong here, but they called in I think it was an anonymous call for red flag, and then he ended up in a standoff with the police, and he ended up getting killed because it was the middle of the night. No one knew what was going on. It was a no-knock red flag. Mm-hmm. And he ended up getting killed because of someone's false report. But he had done nothing to anyone. He wasn't harming anyone. There was no data, evidence, or supporting documentation to say that he was a threat to public safety. Someone just had a problem with him, called it in, and he lost his life.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
And I think we start to see a little bit more of that more and more as, I don't know, man. I hate to say it, but I see more militarization of public safety.
Yep. Yep. So. And I know that's a hot topic too, because it's where do we stop with what the police are allowed to have, federal law enforcement, all that. Is it too much? And I think it kind of goes back and forth, because I think when you're in that side of the system, you're like, why do civilians see plate carriers, communication, helmets, night vision, all this. And then when you're on the opposite side of it, like I've always been for both sides, have whatever you want. There's mm-hmm. one way to do a job. There's one way to protect yourself. But then you get out, you realize like no one's coming to save you. If you have a communication set up and you can talk with people that can respond and, you know, whatever, good. But having those means to save yourself, no one's coming. And if they do, it's going to be too late by the time you need them. So it's very hard to get both sides of that. But yes, there's, I think, a really big militarization with law enforcement across the U.S., both federal and state.
Yep. And there we have it. So, but let me preface this next section here real quick, because this segment that we're going to talk about here in a second is for educational purposes only and not considered to be legal advice. So laws might vary based on your jurisdiction. And as we always tell students, especially in our ACHP classes, if you're using your permit and practicing reciprocity in other states, make sure you understand what the laws are in that state as well.
Like, yep.
You can't be like, oh, I didn't know. No, you have to know.
Yes.
Like, I mean, we've all heard that old adage that ignorance of the law is no excuse. And there's a degree of truth to that. Heck, you probably violate 4 or 5 federal laws just driving here every day.
Yep.
Like, who knows, right? Like, it's just insane the crap that's on the books nowadays. But make sure you always consult with a qualified attorney. That's my plug for Bill Satterberg. in your state. Or for advice specific to your situation. So, yeah. Hope Bill's listening. Bill's a good guy.
That'd be good. Bill, if you're listening, call in.
But anywho, yeah, we got to go into this mandatory break here for local and national news and weather from our AI meteorologist. Probably have absolutely no idea what's going on in the state of Alaska than what they probably pick up off of some computer. So we'll be right back here at Shooter's Corner with Matt and Chuck, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, KFAR.
Broadcasting from the Satellite West studio, you're listening to KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM.
Fox News, I'm Tom Graham. The Justice Department says 15 people in Minnesota are facing charges. They're accused of defrauding state-managed Medicaid programs out of $90 million as part of an autism scheme.
The way the scam worked is these centers encouraged parents to get diagnoses for their kids that were bogus, then bill the government and U.S. taxpayers for treatment of autism for a kid that didn't need it.
Fox's Mike Tobin there. The Trump administration loosening a federal rule forcing grocery stores and air-conditioned companies to reduce greenhouse gases used in cooling equipment, arguing the cost of compliance is just too high.
Many grocery stores and restaurants had no choice but to replace their refrigerators entirely. They went out of business, half of them. And these costs rose. Americans faced higher grocery prices.
President Trump speaking at the White House today. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
KTOO reports the Juneau Assembly voted on Monday night to divest from Eagle Crest Ski Area's gondola project and pay back a $10 million investment from Gold Belt Incorporated. The vote marks a reversal of the Assembly's controversial 2022 decision to purchase the gondola for the city-owned ski area. It comes after the Assembly learned the project's price tag would be nearly 4 times more than expected due to additional parts, high construction costs, and tariffs on imports. Despite backing out of the estimated $37 million project, Juneau taxpayers still fronted more than $12 million up to this point, which includes the payback to Gold Belt approved Monday night. Due to compounding monthly interest on the investment, the city actually owes Gold Belt around $12.2 million, but it has roughly $2.7 million still set aside for the project, so it will pay about $9.5 million. The money comes from the city's general fund.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
What does it look like when your faithful friend in the driveway has an off day? Well, it looks like no fun, like bumming a ride to work, the store, rescheduling lunch with your yoga instructor, all because your four-wheeled pal is waiting for parts. We do our own routine maintenance, but our chariot depends on us to schedule that for them. Airboat and inboard service too. Family owned and operated. Keeping Fairbanks on the road since 1967. Rogers Auto Repair.
Auto Trim Design has it all, from radios, speakers, amplifiers, moose lights, running boards, and step bars, to WeatherTech floor liners and mud flaps. And don't forget about the CompuStar remote starts, Arctic polyurea spray and bed liners, back racks, and ladder racks. Auto Trim Design also has Lear and ARE toppers and smart caps. All this and more at Auto Trim Design under the big American flag.
Customized by Auto Trim Design.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
All right, welcome back, listeners. You're with Chuck and Matt here at Shooter's Corner at the KFAR Studios in Fairbanks, Alaska. Still about 50 degrees.
54.
54 degrees, and the sun is out, so that giant heat tab in the sky is going to start warming up our bodies and warming up everything else, and
Yuck.
It's going to be nice, and then it's going to have our second season, which is either going to be smoke or rain all.
I already saw some of the smoke planes leaving the Fort Wainwright airfield yesterday because I work right behind it. So I got to see them taking off. They were going somewhere north. So I think, unfortunately, it has already started.
Who knows?
Yeah.
All right. Do we have a caller?
Yes, we do. Let's get this caller on.
Yeah. Hey, caller, you're here with Chuck and Matt here at Shooter's Corner. Go ahead.
Hello. My name is Randy.
Hello, Mr. Randy.
Hello, and I wanted to comment on the militarization of the police.
Mm-hmm.
And you were saying that there's a lot of that trend across the nation. And I'm all for it. Now, I'm just a citizen. I've never been a policeman or in a public safety department or anything. But I want my police to be my local police. I don't want any federalities or anything like that. But local police, I want them to be protected with military-looking bulletproof vests or whatever gear they have. And certainly to have an armored personnel carrier, you know, for dangerous situations. I don't want my police to be put into undue danger when they're trying to arrest some psycho criminal or something. And the important thing, like I say, is local control. As long as we're local and we can, if they somehow go overboard or something with goose stepping down the street or whatever, you know, something like that, we can just fire them all or something. And one issue regarding that is something that happened in 2009. They introduced at the federal level the Public Safety Employer-Employee Cooperation Act of 2009, with Senate Bill 1611. But anyway, what that bill would have done is it would have allowed the federal government to have the power to mandate that if the employees, the police employees, want to be unionized, that they can do so by federal mandate. Now, some police forces, like Fairbanks, for instance, they are unionized, and some, like North Pole, are not unionized, but it's a state issue. And as long as the feds don't get involved in that, but if the local police forces feel like they're beholden to the power of the federal government, in addition to getting money and everything else from that they get, but if they feel overly beholden, where the local people start losing control of their own police forces, then that's where it's bad. That's where the quote-unquote militarization might be bad.
Right. You know, kind of my whole concept, but I've been on both sides. I've been in the military. I've been LEO, recently retired from all of the above. I don't necessarily disagree with it in certain circumstances. What I don't want to see, though, is the transition to of being the we are warriors in our community because they're needed, don't get me wrong, on certain times and places. But we also need guardians, right? Yeah. So there's kind of a distinct difference. Now, the guardian, obviously, can always be that person who just steps up and automatically becomes the warrior for the tribe, if you will, right, to put it in that concept. But not all of the time. Like, they tend to look at things always bad. I think we used to call it a fundamental attribution error, where you, like, see the bad in everything. And that's not always the case. Like, I got it. State troopers up here have a bear cat. Is that needed? Yes, because they've gone to calls where a person's barricaded with a gun, firearm, and there's other family members inside there. So therefore, they need that. What I don't like to see, though, is where the military, the feds, the LEO are the only ones that have firearms and the citizens don't.
Oh, that would be horrible.
Oh, you think? Yeah, yeah, it's called despotism. Like, it's called communism. I mean, it's called whatever you want to make it, but it's definitely not a free society. So, yeah.
That would put us like Australia, where people get herded into their homes and locked down because there's some kind of pandemic supposed threat, and the police have all the guns and the people have nothing, and therefore can be easily intimidated. Yeah, we don't want that.
Oh, yeah, and you know the second playbook here now is the Hanta virus, right? You don't think that's going to replace Corona coming up in the next elections? I don't know. Don't call me a conspiracy theorist, but something's being planned. Mass media is always on something. So,
yeah.
All right, Randy, appreciate your call.
Well, one other thing I might say, talking about the mentality of the police, you know, in other words, there's the recruitment, you know, the vest and all that stuff, the appearance, trying to recruit people for the police, you know, right out of the military, and the ads go something like, or the pitch goes, wouldn't you like to hop over hedges or fences and go after, and you know, you know, kind of utilizing the military mindset to attract military people to get into the police force. I got no problem with that. Sure, I want them to be trained to be nice and polite, you know, just like some Bobby on the street with his little billy club and cute little copper buttons or whatever. But if I thought, you know, would I ever want to be a policeman, you know, when I was much younger and everything? And I thought certain aspects of police work would be fun. I would love to jump over hedges and fences chasing for a half mile after a police, after a bad guy, you know. That makes it sound fun. So if they use that to attract some people, more power to them, you know. There's certain things I wouldn't like being a policeman, and that is that law that says that when there's a domestic dispute and you go there, somebody has to be arrested. I hate that. I would want the ability to determine whether I got to arrest them or not. You know, I'd like to rather have them just man and wife or whatever, who's ever squabbling, shake hands, you know, and you know, if it's a repeat kind of thing, yeah, somebody may have to go to jail. But anyway, that's my thought.
Yeah, and that's not a mandatory thing, by the way. That they literally, law enforcement has the ability here in the state of Alaska to call the district attorney's office and get permission for a non-arrest. But yes, you're generally right. There is a mandatory arrest, but there is a safeguard to that as well, just so you know. So
that's good.
Yeah. All right, let's go on. Appreciate that call, Randy. All right, today's training segment is one every armed citizen needs to hear and understand. There we go. There's my radio voice back. We're going to break down a real case that should never have ended the way it did, and we're going to use it to sharpen your knowledge of when deadly force is legally justified and when it is not. You know, I was reading Forrest's book again. I know. Beat me up later. But I am absolutely amazed at the amount of people that put on their stuff like, oh, this guy was in my driveway, blah, 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 and somebody will post on there, probably with their real name.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it was my yard, I'd go out there and shoot him. Yeah, let me know how that works out for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. From the state-provided facility that you will be living in, you know?
Yeah.
Freaking geniuses.
Your name's Dick Thompson. You have where you work, where you, you know, what city you live in, all this. Yeah, I would murder all of them if this happened to me. Well, mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah. Well, they don't come right out and say murder, but that's what it would be.
Oh, I've seen it. I've seen it on the Fairbanks, Alaska Facebook page. I've seen some stuff.
Yeah. Sad for them, or maybe actually good for them, is nobody actually screens the stuff like that.
No.
And then archives it, because that would be used in future case where they would understand their culpable mental state.
Yep.
Or like, what do you set back this day, what you would do? Like, didn't that happen just now too? So, anyways, if you haven't already, there's a link also that you can find on the internet about this, but then you have to ask yourself honestly, what would I have done in that situation? So in this particular case, it's a Raul Rodriguez case. A man claims self-defense under Texas Stand Your Ground law. Alaska has a similar one. After a confrontation over loud music at a neighbor's birthday party, he ended up convicted of murder and sentenced to life in prison. Clearly, this shooting shouldn't have happened. But with Castle Doctrine and Stand Your Ground laws now on the books in many states, we're going to see more situations like this unless armed citizens truly understand the law. I have no problem with Castle Doctrine laws. They are good laws. But there are also some of the most misunderstood concepts in the firearms community. Let's fix that right now. The legal standard for using deadly force in almost every state before you can legally use deadly force in self-defense, you must have a reasonable belief that you or another innocent person is about to suffer serious bodily injury or death. As a matter of fact, the state of Alaska has 7 primary reasons that you may, underline and bold, may use deadly force, right? One is to prevent your own death or the death of another third party. Death or serious bodily injury, to prevent kidnapping, to prevent sexual assault in the first degree, to prevent sexual assault in the second degree, and robbery in any degree. So there's your things. Or in sexual abuse of a minor in the first degree. That was the 7th. All right. But anyways, most trainers and legal experts use a simple 3-prong test of ability, opportunity, and jeopardy. And that's what Masad Ayoub talks about mostly in his deadly force instructor course. Do we have another call?
Yes, we do. Oh, all right. And they just dropped off. Never mind.
Yeah, that's fine. If you want to, call back. Ability is, can the attacker physically cause serious injury or death? An unarmed 4-year-old does not have the ability to kill you, so shooting would be unreasonable. Ability usually comes down to, is the person armed with a deadly weapon, or are they capable of causing serious harm with their hands or feet, especially if there's multiple attackers who are younger and stronger? It's not all inclusive. There's other things that they could have in ability. Opportunity. Does the attacker have the chance to use that ability right now? I think we used to call it imminent threat, right? A man with a knife 50 feet away has an ability but not opportunity. He's out of range, at least as of right now. Okay. Opportunity is heavily influenced by distance and your environment. Okay. Jeopardy. Is the attacker actually presenting an imminent threat? In other words, do they intend to kill or hurt you? Or are they acting in a way that makes it reasonable to believe they will? We call this manifest intent. Okay. A uniformed police officer walking past you has both the ability and the opportunity, but you are not in jeopardy because he has no intent to harm you. All three, ability, opportunity, and jeopardy, must be present for your use of deadly force to be considered objectively reasonable. Do we have to go into our break?
Yeah, we're 10 seconds out.
All right. Let's go into our break. We'll be right back after this break. We're going to talk about Castle Doctrine, Stand Your Ground, and how this Raul Rodriguez case kind of panned out and how it is applicable to you as the armed citizen. We'll be right back. 97.5, 660 AM.
Memorial Day weekend already? Get ready for the summer jumpstart. Camping, fishing, hiking, even smoking some fish. Visit Frontier Outfitters for all the tents, sleeping bags, and camping gear you can imagine. Frontier has an impressive selection of optics, GPS equipment, and sunglasses. See their extensive fishing department for all of Alaska. Ocean, lake, and stream. Fly fishing to dip netting. You'll find that brand name outdoor clothing and footwear too, including hip boots and waders. Your next Alaskan adventure begins with Frontier Outfitters for your Alaskan lifestyle.
It's that time of year again. The sun is out, roads are clear, and gravel is everywhere. At Auto Trim Design, we have you covered. With our self-healing paint protection film, keeping your paint looking showroom new and defending from rock chips and scratches, helping your car stay flawless for years. With our ceramic window tint, not only will it have a stylish look, it also provides protection from harmful UV rays, reduces glare, blocks heat, and increases privacy. From exterior protection to interior comfort, Auto Trim Design has you covered. Stop by or give us a call to get your vehicle ready for summer in Alaska.
KFAR weather.
Cloudy skies expected today with a chance for showers. Daytime highs approaching 63. Winds out of the south around 5 miles an hour. Mainly cloudy skies expected tonight. Slight chance of rain showers. Lows dip down to about 42. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Derek Height.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
All right, welcome back, listeners. So back to continuing, we were talking about ability, opportunity, and jeopardy, and how all three must be present for your use of deadly force to be considered objectively reasonable. Also remember, Matt and I are not attorneys, which is probably a good thing. But
it's a very good thing.
Nonetheless, let's see. Many states have passed Castle Doctrine or Stand Your Ground laws. These laws generally say that if you are lawfully in your home, vehicle, or place of business and you are feloniously attacked, it is presumed reasonable to respond with deadly force. The burden shifts. The attacker would have to prove they weren't a deadly threat. This is a strong protection, but it is not a license to shoot anyone who comes onto your property or irritates you. If a burglar breaks in, grabs your TV, and runs out the front door, he is no longer a threat to you. Shooting him in the back would still be illegal in most states, even under Castle Doctrine. Okay? You have to understand, because the threat, the imminent threat, has now left. You might be upset, PO'd, that your TV just disappeared, but it's nothing to like get up in the legal quagmire of then shooting them in the back.
No, I mean, I think
it would be murder.
A $200 TV is way cheaper than thousands and thousands on attorney fees, possible jail time.
Tens of thousands.
Yeah.
Even a $1,000 TV is still cheaper than tens of thousands.
Yeah.
The most important concept most people miss is preclusion. Okay. Here's where it gets critical and where many people get into serious legal trouble. Preclusion means, what other options did you have besides shooting? Could you have retreated safely? Could you have gone inside and locked the door? Could you have sought cover? Could you have used a less lethal option? Could you have simply waited for the police? No reasonable person wants to shoot someone if there is a safe alternative. Let me read that again. No reasonable person wants to shoot someone if there is a safe alternative. If you are ever charged criminally or civilly after a shooting, a jury will ask this exact question. They will put themselves in your shoes and wonder why you pulled the trigger instead of choosing another path. Even in states with strong castle doctrine or stand your ground laws, preclusion still matters to a jury. They will still think, what would I have done? Now let's apply this to the Rodriguez case. We'll run the Rodriguez shooting through the same test. Ability, yes. Multiple attackers, younger, more physically fit, closing the distance, even unarmed, a group can cause serious injury or death. This prong is likely met. Opportunity, yes. They were close and advancing when the shot was fired. Jeopardy, this is where it gets debatable. The prosecution pointed out that the man who was killed was an elementary school teacher with no criminal record. The defense argued the group was drunk, making threats, and advancing aggressively. The shooter couldn't have known the victim's background. And the jury is supposed to judge based on what a reasonable person would have believed in that moment. Even if we give the shooter the benefit of the doubt on the three prongs, he was still convicted. Why? Preclusion. Why didn't he simply go back inside his own house and wait for the police? That's what most reasonable people would have done. If he had done that, he most certainly would not have needed to shoot anyone. His defense argued that because of stand your ground, he didn't have to prove preclusion. He said on video that he was in fear for his life and that he was standing his ground. Those statements did not help him. Just because you say you are in fear for your life does not make your fear legally reasonable. Juries are not impressed by magic words. They look at the facts and ask whether your belief was objectively reasonable. In this case, Rodriguez was not inside his home, car, or place of business when the final confrontation occurred. Because of that, he had to prove he had no other reasonable option. The jury decided he did have another option, and they convicted him. Key takeaways here for the armed citizens out there. Avoidance is still the best self-defense. Don't go looking for trouble. If there's a noisy party next door, call the police or put it in earplugs. You don't have to be the one who confronts people. I like that saying. Not my clowns, not my circus. I don't know. That's just Chuck's personal. Had a lot of that going on in this last trip. Cindy was like, you see that? Not my clowns, not my circus anymore.
Care less.
Does it have an impact on my life? No. Does it have an impact on anybody else's life? No. Just to them? Oh, yeah, they're stupid. That's called Darwinism. All right, yep, we're out. Peace out. Preclusion is real. Even when the law says you don't have to retreat, just because you can stand your ground doesn't mean you should. Creating distance, going inside, or waiting for police is almost always a smarter and safer choice, legally, morally, and tactically. Right? I tell people all the time in our classes, like, even the military has a retreat option. It's called retrograde operations.
Yep.
Right? Like, if they are up against an overwhelming force, or it just doesn't tactically make sense at that time, then retreat.
Yep.
Like, or retrograde, if you want to call it that. Knock yourself out. Location matters. Castle doctrine and stand your ground protections are strongest inside your home or vehicle. Outside on the street or on someone else's property, the rules are stricter. Your words on scene can hurt you. Saying, I was in fear for my life, or I am standing my ground, does not create legal justification. Only the facts do. Juries are made up of regular people. They will ask themselves, what would they have done? If there was a clear, safe way to avoid a shooting, they will wonder why you didn't take it. And then it's important to know the state-specific laws, especially if you're exercising reciprocity and traveling to other states as well with your Alaska concealed handgun permit. The general principles are similar across the country, but the exact wording and requirements vary. What works in Texas may not be the same in Alaska, Florida, or California. California for sure. And coming soon to a theater near you, Oregon is another stand your ground, castle doctrine, suck state.
Just stay away from the West Coast.
It's left coast.
Yeah,
left coast. Washington, Oregon, California, the entire left coast of the United States.
You breathe wrong down there, they will show hostile intent.
Yeah. Carrying a firearm is a serious responsibility. Okay, I know we kind of joke about that, but carrying a firearm is a serious responsibility. The goal of every armed citizen should be never to have to use it. The best outcome is going home safe without ever having to draw your gun. study cases like this. Train your decision-making skills, not just your draw stroke ability. Understand it. Opportunity, make sure you know what that is. Jeopardy, understand manifest intent. And then preclusion. What else could I have done to maybe prevent this? Or what other action could I take to avoid it? And remember, the best self-defense is the one you never have to use. So, what do you think, Mr. Matt?
Well, I like the, I mean, we talk about it in the classes, but the ability to retreat or retrograde. And I think there's something important that I think we've brought up before, but it needs to be really harped on, is there is no shame in avoiding a fight or backing out of one. And I'm saying that because if you have the ability to, if you're not, if your life is not in, you know, imminent danger, there's so many things that can go into it. But I can't tell you how many times I've gotten out of a fight by saying, oops, my bad. Mm-hmm. It could be someone else's fault, 100%.
Oh, yeah.
And they're coming off aggressive. I mean, back in the day, I would go to bars all the time and people get very drunk and they want to fight. You bump them trying to go to the bathroom. Hey, bro. What? And it's, oh, I'm sorry. My yeah. bad. They hit you. I'm sorry. My bad. Like, walk away. And the same thing applies to this. If, you know, they're doing something on your property, you don't have a fence up or whatever, they go on, you're telling them, hey, go away. And they're arguing. They might not hear you. They might be inebriated. They're in the zone. We talk about it. Your tunnel vision going down to, what is it, 2 degrees?
A foveal vision.
Yeah. Like, yeah. You're not going to see everything that happened. So maybe they didn't hear you. So is standing your ground immediately the correct response? No. But do you have...
Maybe not.
Maybe not.
I would say stand your ground is applicable maybe in a public setting. Let's say like you're at a store or something like that. When you have your own family there, they don't have the ability to retreat. So therefore, you're defense of a third person.
Yeah.
I would say if you've already backed up enough, let's say you've already retreated far enough back to where now your back is up against a wall or something like that. It's like now it's inevitable based on their manifest intent, their ability, and obviously opportunities there because the threat is imminent.
Yep.
Or you wouldn't be retreating.
Yeah.
I would say that that'd probably be a significant case where you could articulate stand your ground. But don't come right out and say, I was standing my ground.
Yep.
Lay out the facts. Make that public safety statement. That's the person that attacked me. Here's that's the item that they had in their hand they were attacking me with. Or even if you have past knowledge of their skill set or whatever, like just be able to articulate that stuff. Show the police or the responding officers what the threat was, how it affected you, and then shut up.
Yeah.
That's the hardest part for everybody. They all want to like help out with the investigation. The facts are going to lay out the way they were. Maybe point out some witnesses.
Yeah.
But the hardest thing is to shut up and stop talking and feeding information because you've literally transitioned during that significant emotional event from your prefrontal cortex, your reason thinking, to your amygdala. And you might not be processing everything exactly the way it had happened. So therefore, anything you say, obviously, can and will be used against you in a court of law because it's going to be recorded. And so if you misstate some facts because your brain didn't remember it that way at that time, and then two sleep cycles later, your brain, as it transitions back to its prefrontal cortex, remembers it, and you go back and have a conversation, they're going to be like, oh, you were just lying. You're trying to minimize it.
Yeah.
And they'll go back with the original statement. That's the one that will be played in court. It'll be your defense team's responsibility to play this stuff after.
Yeah.
You know, because that's... Murder happened, but for a reason.
Yeah.
That's what you have to prove is the reason why.
Yep.
So.
And making sure you have your, again, like you talk about it a lot too, the CYA.
Can you articulate? Can you authenticate?
Yep. And again, getting your facts right that's what's going to either make or break you. Because if you see it all the time, you hear people talk about it, lawyers say it all the time, shut up, lawyer up. You know, give as little as possible until you speak with an attorney. Wait that 48 hours. There's plenty of times where, like, especially in training, where it's a stressful training environment, and I get to the end of it, and I'm like, man, I only shot like 10 rounds. And I get through, and I went through 4 mags. I'm like, well, I don't remember shooting that much, but I guess I was laying, you know, cover fire, you know, doing whatever. And even in your day-to-day stuff, you might go to the store and you don't remember getting half the stuff that was happening because you were overwhelmed with how many people or someone was yelling at their kid or whatever. Like, it happens all the time. So to think that you are going to give a 100% accurate statement the moment after something happens is going to get you hurt or it's going to get you in trouble. So just wait. Shut up and wait.
Hey, I hope everybody out there in listening land learned something a little bit today. So I know we've all talked about ability, opportunity, jeopardy. We had to add in the preclusion. So, hey, stay tuned with us next week. We'll be right back here with Matt and myself. I don't know, maybe Miss Cindy will join us. But nonetheless, we're back. And so stay tuned. Shooter's Corner next Thursday, 11 to 12. We'll talk about more interesting stuff here in the great state of Alaska. Have a great long weekend. Stay safe. Don't drink and drive. Peace out.
You've been listening.